This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. Happy New Year, everyone. Our topic is undue influence and elder abuse, what they are, how to identify them, and what to do if undue influence and financial abuse are suspected. It's my pleasure to have with me Michael Hackard, founder of Hackard Law, a law firm which focuses on estates and trust litigation. Mr. Hackard is a member of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar of California. He's the author of The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. It's available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon, Amazon Books. And Mr. Hackard's law firm is in Mather, Sacramento County, California. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar of California, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. And, Mike, it's great to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here, Chuck.
Thank you for coming from Mather to San Francisco.
Oh, it's quite a trek.
Great to have you here. Yeah. One of the things that I want everyone to know, and I am very impressed, just by coincidence, of getting an email about your book. It is outstanding. And I think it's a great book for anyone who is concerned possibly about protecting older people, or if you're an older person yourself, what are the kinds of things that you want to protect yourself about? And I want everyone to know that the publisher of this book is my friend across the table from me. There is no fee whatsoever that has been generated to my program or the station with respect to this book. And I think it's important that you tell from the outset, where are the proceeds from this book going?
Okay, thank you. Any of the money that comes in by way of Amazon or Barnes & Noble or however it's done, we send to the Alzheimer's Organization of America. As I've said from the beginning, I don't want to make a nickel on this book. I'd love for the book to continue to sell very well, which it is. But we also give the books away. I've done that, you know, at many speeches, and I'm looking forward to doing it more through the coming year.
Well, I'm very impressed with that. And one of the things that Mike has, and he's a very gracious guy. And by the way, everybody, I want you to know that Mike is someone who I have met through being introduced to his book just a couple of weeks ago. He is not a longtime friend, but someone who I feel is a very valuable person to all of us in terms of education in the area of certainly undue influence and financial abuse. He had told me that if you want, maybe you want to write this down, if you want to send him an email, he will send you one of his paperback books. It is in paperback, free, no charge whatsoever. So here's his email address in case you are so interested. Get ready. Get ready with your pen or pencil and a piece of paper. Hackard, H-A-C-K-A-R-D, at HackardLaw, that's one word, .com. Hackard at HackardLaw.com. And if you want to get a copy of the book, which is really remarkable, in my opinion, The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse, he will send it to you. Where is this happening, undue influence? Is it primarily the victims are people who are beginning to have memory loss, who maybe have Alzheimer's? What's going on? And what should we as laypersons be aware of to protect either ourselves or close friends who are elderly or members of the family?
Well, it is quite widespread. So if we step back and think that in America we have about 40 million people that are 65 and older, and there have been various reports and studies that show that 1 in 10 seniors has identified that they feel like they've been subject to some kind of elder abuse within the previous year. Now, mm-hmm. Who knows exactly what that is, but some of it's obviously very serious, maybe some of it less serious. But the National Adult Protective Services Organization, it calls this an epidemic. And I think
this is nationwide.
Nationwide,
yeah.
And there are other studies that say only one in 44 cases is ever reported. There are a lot of things like that. And of course, anecdotally, most of your listeners, if we think about it, may have heard of this kind of elder financial abuse. Maybe it was a neighbor. Maybe it was a family member. Maybe it's just something that they read about or somehow heard about. But it is an epidemic. And of course, as we, and I happen to fit within this group, the baby boomers, well, there's some 65 million baby boomers. 10,000 baby boomers every day turn the age of 65.
Oh my goodness!
So, so this is a larger, this is a fairly large group. I was looking another study, and so you know, just thinking about it, but you know, basically around California, around 13% of our population out of 40 million is 65 and above, but. It's thought it's in 20 years from now, there are projections it could be as high as 23% of our population will be 65 and above.
I've seen that.
That's huge.
Yeah, I've seen that statistic, yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's huge.
What are the red flags that if we as neighbors of some older person or perhaps a relative of ours is elderly, what are the red flags that we should be looking for in terms of that might show undue influence leading to financial abuse of an older person?
There are a number of them. One thing that sometimes you will see with someone who is being abused is a sense of embarrassment by the person who's being abused, and they may be reticent to talk about what's happening to them, but you know, family members or those close to them might just detect this, that there's some kind of embarrassment there. The other thing,
embarrassment, why?
I think it's embarrassment because as we get older and say we have cognitive decline and
we don't want to admit it.
Yeah, we don't want to admit it.
Okay,
it's somehow demeaning to us to admit it.
Yeah.
And so I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing are when bills are not being paid. So something's going on there.
Yes.
Secrecy. When an elder wants to keep everything secret. Well, sometimes that's generated because someone's taking advantage of them and telling them things, and I've seen this, things such as, you know, if you tell anybody about this, I'm going to send you to the old people's home. Or if it's a dependent, we talked about, you and I on the side talked a little about addicted dependent children in that kind
you
of
mean
conduct.
Drug addiction.
Yeah, drug addiction with children who are adult children, but that's they are common abusers, unfortunately, because they have no, generally, maybe don't have any income of their own. They're utilizing their parents' income, and the parent is very vulnerable to them because the parent wants to be able to take care of them. On the other hand, the parent's getting taken advantage of in many cases.
Well, are there other red flags besides what you've just told us?
Yeah. Other red flags are isolation.
Yeah.
If you see a parent or an elderly person being cut off from family members in the community, and those cutoffs occur in all kinds of different ways. Some of them simply may be that whoever is living with the elder or caretaker or other person in the house simply won't let you in. Or if you're trying to call the elder, you cannot get through on a phone line. Oftentimes, elders' phones are taken away. And, of course, the other thing that's bad that does occur is abduction. People will take their – I've had many cases
abduction.
Like this.
What do you mean by that?
Well, someone who is taking advantage of the elder moves them out of state.
Oh, my.
So – and of course,
away from their other family members.
Away from the other family
away
members.
Away from their neighbors, et cetera.
Exactly. And of course, then the elder's very vulnerable. And the sad thing is when I've seen this happen, the elder, him or her, thought they were just going to, say, Johnny's house in Arizona for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Little did they know that Johnny'd taken over everything.
Oh, my.
He sold their home, and then they're stuck someplace where they don't want to be.
One of the things that I think is that I have learned through this, and I don't, having practiced law over 50 years myself, I have never had an undue influence or financial abuse of the elder case to deal with. As a deputy DA for San Mateo County, I had some occasion to have some information provided to me where perhaps someone was being taken advantage of. Like, for example, I remember one situation was there was this elderly woman in one of the cities in San Mateo County who apparently had been called by someone who I identified himself as the attorney for the Canadian Lottery, mm-hmm. and that she had won $500,000. But what she had to get before she could get that check is to send the taxes ahead of time, and the taxes ahead of time were $100,000. She did that.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And fortunately, after she won supposedly the $500,000 and she sent back the $100,000, she then was called by this attorney again the next week who said, "Oh, Mrs. So-and-so, I was mistaken before. You have won $1,000,000. You're going to have to do this. Send us another $100,000. So she was in the process of about to mortgage her home that had no mortgage on it. And fortunately, I found out about this and sent one of our investigators with the San Mateo County DA's office to contact her. Fortunately, we stopped that.
Good.
But in any event, one of the things that I think that I have learned from you and your book is that, and I'm kind of jumping ahead of a moment, because what I have learned in doing this program for 33 years is that the average person is very concerned about, gee, do I really have to hire a lawyer? Because they're expensive, $300, $400 an hour. One of the things that I have learned from reading your book and talking to you is that many of these cases with attorneys, including yourself who handle these, do it on contingent fee basis. Will you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, and oftentimes we do these on a contingency fee basis. A contingency fee generally means that if we don't succeed, then we don't receive any money. It's much like in personal injury cases.
Yes.
We do it when we can, because most of the time when people have come to us, it's because they've had their money taken away and they don't have the money.
They have nothing.
Yeah. They don't have the money to
They just
to
have
do
debts.
It. Yeah, they have debts.
They
have
can't
debts.
Pay, yeah.
And then to add insult to injury, they end up paying us on a contingency fee, mm-hmm. but of course I can't keep my law firm going with zero funds.
No, so, of course you can.
So, but we do work to. I do what I can on a contingency fee basis for people, just so that they can have representation.
Mm-hmm.
And we conform with all the rules of the state bar. And I think.
Oh, sure.
I think it's worthwhile. Let me add one other thing,
yes,
since
please.
We're talking about it. So in elder financial abuse, the law changed in January of 2014. It made the law much more positive and friendly toward yeah. elders and their families that have been damaged. And among other things, it allows for the assessment of attorney's fees against the wrongdoer. That also helps. I would add the other thing is that there a lot of lawyers don't know about this law, and part of what I'm doing, I'm teaching a course this month to a bar association in Sacramento, I think in a couple months in San Francisco, and another one in Southern California later. But lawyers need to know about this. They're going to be able to help more seniors if they learn the law, and because the legislature has stepped up and said, we need to protect seniors,
yeah.
and here's a good law to help do it.
Well, I think that's terribly important. And it's surprising to me that the law changed as of January 1st, 2014, when obviously elder financial abuse has been going on well before that.
Oh, it's been rampant.
Yeah.
It's interesting because if you look at even this last year, the Senate, U.S. Senate, came up with a law which was signed into effect to identify to help identify throughout the country elder financial abuse, mm-hmm. and to create some reporting requirements on it.
Yeah.
In particular, in that case, having to do with guardians and conservators who have abused elders. But there's a high sensitivity and it's getting better. There are people are looking out for elders.
I'm very pleased to hear that. One of my friends of a number of years, when I told her that we were doing this program, she said to me that there was one of her neighbors in the area, I believe, that she had been very concerned about, perhaps was a victim of undue influence, possible financial abuse. And as a neighbor, she wondered what possible negative potential might there be for a neighbor who sees something that doesn't look good in trying to either contact the authorities or whatever. What might you tell us on that?
If the report goes to the to law enforcement or Adult Protective Services, there really is no exposure with regard to that. The exposure probably has to do with the wrongdoer. That's a realistic peer.
What do you mean by that?
Well, let's suppose that you're reporting that your neighbor has been taken advantage of. It looks like their money's been taken, and their wrongdoer is, let's say it's an adult child who has threatened both the parent and anyone else who wants to reach out to the parent to help them. I've had people, actually, this happens with probably once a month. People tell me, you know, I think that if I do something here, so-and-so is going to kill me. Now, I haven't seen anybody killed.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
But it's the kind of, you know, it's rather interesting and frightening in its own way that people are so fearful. The other thing is, if you say it's a neighbor, I just had this happen. You know, if you can reach out to the person who you think has been injured or abused, and you take them to, you could take them maybe to law enforcement, or we have people come to us that maybe it's a neighbor or some other interested person who brings them into our office. Mm-hmm. And when we, you know, then we do what we can to help from there and send them to the right spots.
How let me just do this. Everyone, this is our first program of the year, Your Legal Rights first program of the year. We're doing this on the evening of Wednesday, January 3rd of 2018. And I hope for all of us, including yourself, that this is going to be a good year for all of us. But what I want to let you know, in about maybe 15 minutes or so, I will invite you to call in with your questions, your comments, your concerns on this area of undue influence and elder abuse. And here's our toll-free number. We'll take calls probably in about approximately 15 minutes or so. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And for those of you who are not aware of this, if you've missed some of the program or you want to hear it again, Your Legal Rights is now available as a podcast free of charge. If you want to jot this down, this magic website, www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE, and take advantage of it if you would like, www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE. If you tune in just a little bit late, my guest is Michael Hackard. He's the founder of Hackard Law. It's a law firm that focuses on estates and trust litigation in Mather, which is in Sacramento County in California. He's written a book recently entitled The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. It's available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon, Amazon Books, if you Google Amazon and look for books. And what he's done, he's a very gracious guy. He has said, and we've talked about this at the very beginning of the program, that if you would like to jot down his email address and send him an email, he will send you a book free. It's a paperback. It is actually, let me see, how many pages do we have here? It's great reading, very fast reading, very valuable reading. Without the notes, it goes about 133 pages. I highly recommend it to you if you are an elder person or if you have someone who is an older friend, an older neighbor, an older member of your family, and you're concerned about them, I highly suggest you read it. So here's his email, Hackard, H-A-C-K-A-R-D, at HackardLaw, that's one word, HackardLaw.com, Hackard at HackardLaw.com. Do you find that there is a way that some suggestions you have about if someone is concerned about someone being taken advantage of, how we go about protecting them? And I'm not asking you to give us all the information, but what are some of the things that we might do to try to see if we can protect this person?
A really important part of all of that is transparency. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that the, let's say it's the parent or the elder, has bank accounts, it's a kind of two-edged sword, but bank accounts, securities accounts, those types of things, pardon me, there ought to be some transparency with it. Someone who is close to them that is trustworthy, that also has knowledge as to those accounts, because you can go through, say, a monthly statements and see if money's being taken out of those accounts. And where what we do see is somebody, the wrongdoer, using an ATM card for their own purposes or credit cards. Yeah. You know, over Christmas here, I looked at one case where the wrongdoer went to Hawaii for Christmas.
That's right. Hawaii is fun to go to.
That's right. Yeah. Must have been very nice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the problem is the senior didn't want that.
Of course. This is, though, something that is not only done by some caregivers who are hired to take care of the older person, but also some family members.
Yeah, unfortunately, a very high incidence of the wrongdoing is related to family members.
Would you say more by family members than by persons who are hired to care for them?
Yeah, more.
Really?
More by family members.
Oh my.
And that's terribly troubling and
divisive
to a family.
It is.
And that's another thing, that to the extent that you're going to provide transparency to family members, oftentimes it makes sense to provide that transparency to more than one family
member. Sure, of course.
So that, you know, there's kind of a checks and balances that goes with that.
I have some recollection, Mike, some years ago in a program that I did on the air, that there was a relatively recent law, and this is within the last few years, that banks or bank tellers, if they suspect that someone who, let's say, is bringing an elder person into the bank and using that elder person's ATM card, as you say, or withdrawing money otherwise, that a teller or the bank itself has some responsibility in contacting authorities, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're right on it. But it takes an attentive teller or an attentive bank person to see it, because that is a lot of where the wrongdoing does occur. There's in kind of consistent with that, FINRA, which oversees securities firms.
FINRA, what does that stand for?
Financial, what is it? I'm sorry.
I have it here.
It's in there.
Yeah.
But they recently changed their regulations so that effective early this year, a securities, say a broker, can refuse to remit monies to the senior if that securities broker, the money's tied up, but if the securities broker suspects that some elder financial abuse is occurring.
And so FINRA is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority.
Thank you.
So that's the initials are FINRA. Do you find that in instances where, for example, an elder abuser is, let's say, being challenged by someone, either another family member or whoever, maybe a neighbor or whatever, frequently will accuse the other person of lying, the one who's saying, "Hey, what are you doing with my uncle here? What's going on here?" Do you find that frequently the abuser will accuse the other person of lying?
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah, and the abuser, exactly, that's what an abuser will do. And the abuser will be very subversive, will tell the senior, these people are after your money, or what these people want to do is have you sell your house and have you lose your house. And and the other thing, the abuser will say, well, I'm protecting you because every time they're here, it just upsets you. And so, and that's the reason, too, why the senior gets isolated. Yeah, exactly. And that's very troubling to good people who are trying to do the right thing for an elder, for their parent or grandparent, to suffer the insults of the wrongdoer.
In California, I believe in nearly all counties, if not all counties, there is an Office of the Adult Protective Services. How effective would you say, generally speaking, if someone is concerned, a neighbor, a relative of the elder person who believes that the elder person is becoming a victim of elder abuse, financial abuse, how effective is it if someone who is concerned about this elder person calls the local county Adult Protective Services office? What might they expect?
What they could expect is a visit from an officer, and that officer would then try to meet with the elder individually without having another adult immediately present, mm-hmm. so that they can communicate with them. It can work, and there are obviously there are situations where it works very well. Mm-hmm. The places where it doesn't work, because I take tough cases, but is where you have multiple, let's say you have wrongdoer family member and then innocent family member, each reporting. So the wrongdoer family member is calling APS and saying, you know, my mother's daughter is trying to get into the house and take her money or has come in and has stolen the silver. Again, lies. So, and then APS at that point is stuck with a he said and she said. And so it doesn't, you know, there are no magic bullets. It doesn't always work, but it's certainly better than not having it.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'd like to do at this point is invite you all who are listening to the program, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, if this is something that you are concerned about in your own family, or if you're a neighbor and you're concerned about one of your neighbors perhaps being a victim of undue influence or financial abuse, an elder person, here's our toll-free number. I invite you now to call in with your question, your comment, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you are, by the way, listening to the program via the Internet at www.kalw.org, which the program is made available nationwide on the Internet, that's the same number. It's a toll-free number you can use also. And this is a national problem. It's just not unique to California. So please don't feel because you may be in New York or New Jersey or South Carolina or Texas or whatever that this doesn't apply to you. It does. So our toll-free number again is 866-798-8255. If you've tuned in a few minutes late, or just come in and you wonder what in the world is going on here, this is Your Legal Rights. This is our first program of the new year. We're doing it live on Wednesday evening, January 3rd, 2018. And I had the good fortune of finding out about what Mike Hackard has done, both professionally as an attorney, a member of the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar of California. He's been an attorney. You mean to tell me you look so young? You've been a lawyer for 40 years? Huh?
Thank you,
huh?
Yes.
What are you trying to do here, man? Yeah. I've been a lawyer longer than that, and I know I look so young.
You do. Yeah. You know, I thought you looked like my younger brother.
You're funny. You're really funny. His book is, frankly, an excellent one, and I want to assure you that there are no funds that are coming from either Mr. Hacker's law firm or from the funds from the sale of the book to my program or this station. I just feel this is a very, very valuable learning experience if you're interested in making it something that you want to learn from. It's The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. It is available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon Books. However, if you are so interested, Mr. Hackard makes this offer to you. If you would like to send him an email, he will send you a free book. And so here is, if you want to jot down his email address, Hackard, H-A-C-K-A-R-D, at HackardLaw.com. Hackard Law is one word. Hackard at HackardLaw.com, and he will send you a free book. So we do have some people who want to talk to you. Also, for those of you who might want to listen to this program the full hour, if you're a little late in coming in, or if you want to listen to it again, Your Legal Rights is now available as a podcast free of charge at www.kalw.org/subscribe, SUBSCRIBE, and it's available for you. It'll be available tomorrow. It should be available tomorrow for you to access it if you'd like. And so we're going to start with Ryan. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. Question is kind of a very complicated situation. So, where can I start? So there is a trustee involved who has been reported to the Adult Protective Services. And exactly like you said, that person is also lying on the other siblings. So it's you know, a he said, she said situation. But that trustee, does that trustee have the a legal obligation to disclose an accounting of what she's spending to care for the mother?
See, that's a very good question.
It is a good question. Yeah, a trustee does have an obligation to account for income and receipts, and actually needs to have receipts. It gets to be a question, who can enforce that accounting? And
that's the issue, isn't it?
That's an issue.
Yeah.
So the person, the trustor or person who's benefiting by that, can force an accounting. It can get a little complicated when other adult children want to enforce an accounting. We do go after that. There are some legal complexities with it, but ultimately that we ought to be able to force that trustee to account. And of course, the alternative is to try to go in and get that trustee removed, mm-hmm. and put someone else into to the trust.
When you say go into court?
Yeah, you need to go into court.
Is that the probate court?
It's a probate court, and it's in the county where the trustee resides.
I see.
In the county where the if the trustee is in New York, and the person being cared for is in Palo Alto, you'd have to file for it in New York.
The general rule is that you'd have to file for it in New York. Now, I've seen a few cases, a few come to mind that we were involved in, that I think Colorado and Arizona, mm-hmm. where we did get the California court. Mm-hmm. To take jurisdiction over the trust. You brought up a good and complex question. There are ways to do it. It's not easy, but there are ways to do it where you have an out-of-state trustee.
Ryan, have you made any attempt to contact an attorney to try to get some help on this?
Oh, my God. It's just, I'm sorry. I'm just really emotional right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet you are.
It's just really hard to find someone. I've called Lynn Tillum's office. I've contacted several attorneys, and everyone is like, oh, this is like really complicated. You need to contact Adult Protective Services.
Have you done that?
Oh, yeah.
You have.
Done that. And just like Michael was saying, the person did come out to the house, have a conversation with the person. She unfortunately has dementia.
Yeah, yeah.
But the trustee is like in a whole nother state, but she's calling all the shots and making it really difficult. There's isolation, there's financial abuse, questionable spending.
Ryan, is the trustee another family member?
Yes.
Ah, I see. Is this a brother or sister of yours?
Sister.
Yeah. How many other kids and how many other siblings besides you and your sister?
I have another sister that's younger than me, and another sister that's she's my stepsister.
And where are they located?
My stepsister is in Sacramento. My younger sister is in Modesto, and I'm here closer to my mom.
And you are in San Francisco, Ryan, are you not?
Yes.
And your mom is where? In what city?
Palo Alto.
She's in Palo Alto. Well, listen to what we are going to talk about further, and maybe it'll give you some insight. I think what you might want to do at this point, if I may suggest this, you might want to contact the Board of Legal Specialization of California. Maybe you want to have a consultation with one of the attorneys who specializes in estate planning, trust, and probate law, just to get started. And let me give you that phone number to call if you'd like to do that.
Yeah.
It's 415-538-2100. 415-538-2100. You might want to do that. However, what Michael Hackard is doing here is probably, he is a specialist of a specialist. I mean, not everybody has the kind of specialty and experience that he does. But I would suggest you might want to do that, make some calls. It sounds like you are very upset about this, and I can understand why. I'm going to give you another suggestion. If you want to turn back hang up your phone and turn back on the radio, I'm going to give you another source to contact, which may be of some help to you.
Okay.
So thank you very much for calling, and I hope that what we are doing here on the program may be of some help to you. I'd like you to jot down the phone number for the Bar Association of San Francisco Lawyer Referral, and that number is 415-989-1616, 415-989-1616. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. And for a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar Association, call that number, 415-989-1616. If you are in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. That's 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And I'm a great believer in the lawyer referral service because, depending on where you are in California, just about every county has a lawyer referral service, a bar association, a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, and what they'll do is try to set you up with an attorney who has experience in the area. And with minor exception in California, you will pay for that half an hour session somewhere between $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service because it's a very fine consumer service. And so by doing this as a consumer, you may well be able to get some insight of what you do next or what you can do next. Do you have any other thoughts for Ryan at this point?
No, those are great ideas, and the lawyer, I'm glad that I know that you're so committed to, and it's a terrific opportunity to meet with lawyers that do know what they're talking about through the lawyer referral service.
Yeah, so try that, Ryan. At this point, obviously, the fact that one of your sisters is a trustee and she's in New York and your mom is in Palo Alto, et cetera, This is a very difficult situation, and perhaps you may get some answers by trying either the California Board of Legal Specialization, which is one of the funders of this program and has been for, I think, 27 years, and, of course, the San Francisco Bar Lawyer Referral Service is also a funder of the program. The whole point of these entities, the California Board of Legal Specialization, the Trust in the State Section of the State Bar, the San Francisco Bar Association. This is a public service. We're trying to educate people about their rights and obligations, and I'm not trying to find business for lawyers, although some people think I do. That's not what I'm doing. I'm a consumer advocate, and I am trying to help people be able to benefit from learning, starting by learning themselves, by doing kind of educating themselves, etc. All right. We have Tara. Tara, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi, Tara.
Hi. I didn't quite get what you say about undue influence. When you say influence, what do you mean in psychological terms?
Okay. All right. That's a very good question, Tara. If you will take the answer on the air, if you would, turn your radio back on. And again, I want to invite others of you who have not yet called us. Please don't hesitate. Let's take advantage of the fact that Mike Hackard is here. The toll-free number anywhere in the United States is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Undue influence. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so I'll give the statutory definition, since the judges start with that, or the juries. But the statutory definition says that undue influence is excessive persuasion. So I'm going to emphasize excessive, because we all persuade. But excessive persuasion that causes another person to act or refrain from acting by overcoming that person's free will and results in inequity. So now let's step it up a little bit further, because what happened? You always say there was undue influence, but what happened? Well, it might be that that mom transferred her house to sister before mom passed away, and that was never mom's plan throughout her 75 years of life.
Yeah.
So one of the things when you're looking at undue influence, you want to look at the vulnerability of the person who is being unduly influenced. And that person, it doesn't have to be incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be people think, oh, if they don't have capacity, that's it. But that really isn't it. I mean, it's part of it. But you can be vulnerable by illness or disability or injury, grief.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen plenty of cases like that. Age, education. I recently have a case now where the person who was unduly influenced couldn't read. Cognitive impairment, emotional distress, isolation, dependency. That makes someone fully vulnerable. So, and then other parts of the undue influence laws that whoever is unduly influencing someone needs to know that, in fact, that person is vulnerable. It can go on from there, but those are some of the elements.
I'm not sure what county you are in, Tara, but one of the things that you might want to do also at this point, if there is a concern that you have about someone, whether it's a family member or perhaps a close friend or neighbor or whatever, and you feel that person is really the victim of undue influence, if you believe that, you know, as Mike has suggested just a few minutes ago, the Adult Protective Services in your county, whatever county that is there to look into this, at least by sending one of its agents, one of the persons in the office, to the elder person's home to do an interview. So you might want to contact the Adult Protective Services of your county or wherever the elder person is living. You would want to contact the county in which that elder person is living and request that a member of the Adult Protective Services office go and visit that person. Additional funding of your legal rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Now, I would like to see those of you who, and maybe you're being very hesitant about doing this. We have about maybe 12 minutes left of the program, and I want to make this work for those of you who may have a problem. If you can, if you feel as possible in the situation where you are right now and you have a potential concern about undue influence, about financial abuse of an elder, take advantage and call us now on a, pardon me, our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if for some reason you're in a situation where you feel the person who may be the abuser is there and you don't have the freedom to make this call, let me just give you again the name of the book and the offer that my guest Mike Hackard has made if you would like to get a free copy of the book. The book is entitled, and you might want to jot it down, The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. It's available in paperback and Kindle on Amazon, Amazon Books. But Mr. Hackard will send you one free if you would like to jot down his email address and send him an email requesting one. It's Hackard, H-A-C-K-A-R-D, at HackardLaw.com, HackardLaw.com. So it's Hackard at HackardLaw.com if you would like a free book to be sent to you by Mr. Hackard. Again, I urge those of you who have not yet called but you feel you can call, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, and I hope you will take advantage of this. Let me just ask you something else here that I think is very important that you have put in your book. Mediation. What's the significance of mediation, and when does it come up, as opposed to filing a lawsuit?
Right. You can actually mediate a dispute before filing a lawsuit. There are families that are able to do that. And the mediation may occur over, like, who's going to take care of mom? Who's going to help pay mom's bills? How are we going to go about doing this? Are we going to split it between family members? And so a skilled mediator can help early on in that process. Later in the litigation process, mediators can be engaged to help come up with some kind of arrangement between the litigating parties that will, you know, resolve the matter at hand. If the elder is still alive, that can handle a lot of issues, such as we talked about, where they're going to live and how they're going to be taken care of. If the person is deceased, it oftentimes gets to be just the allocation of the estate and how do you allocate it. But one other thing about mediation that I would say, some lawyers are afraid to go to mediation, or if you suggest mediation early on, they think that you're not strong or believe in your case. I reject that wholly. And other times they think, well, if I go to a mediator, I might not get what I want. Well, I don't look at mediators as though they're Svengali. If I don't want to go along with the mediator, I'm not going to go along with the mediator.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like going to court and having a trial and having either a judge or a jury come up with a judgment.
Exactly.
If the session of mediation is something that you don't feel is going your way, that you don't feel comfortable is going to resolve this, you don't have to accept it.
Exactly.
Do you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
But it is a very – mediation is a very valuable thing in all areas of legal disputes between people. And usually, at least my experience, having been a deputy DA for San Mateo County, there's a very fine nonprofit organization in San Mateo County that does mediation. And it can be very, very helpful.
I agree.
At a very small fee. Now, you know, perhaps in certain areas mediation may be more expensive, but certainly my experience in dealing with it, it has been very, very reasonable for people to do this. So it's something to keep in mind. All right. Let's see. We have Michelle right now. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Listen, I have called the San Francisco Lawyer Referral Service.
Yeah.
And I haven't had much luck.
Oh, dear.
First, you know, I had someone ask me how much I made a year.
Yeah.
And I told him I get my retirement and Social Security. I didn't tell him I have other assets. And he referred me to a lawyer who was barely polite and said, oh, this is a very difficult case. And anyway, you couldn't afford it. What do you do in that case? And I've had other problems too with that referral service.
Vicki, let me ask you this for a moment. Without going into a lot of detail, what is the area of the dispute? Where's the problem? What's going on?
It was an HOA problem.
Oh, you were living in one of the housing association units? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I have a condo.
Yeah.
You know, we have a...
Oh, so you own a condo, and it's the homeowners association. You have some conflict there. Is that right?
I was a property manager and the president of HOA.
Oh, I see. And what county is that in?
San Francisco.
It is San Francisco. And yet, let me suggest this to you. Have you contacted the San Francisco District Attorney's Office?
No.
Okay. My experience as a deputy district attorney for San Mateo County is I have had an ongoing relationship with the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, and they had a very good mediation service. So I think what you might want to do is contact the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. See if you can have the main, when you call the main number, transfer you to their mediation services department.
Mm-hmm.
And find out what do you have to do in terms of seeing if you can present something to them. You'll have to present something in writing to begin with to have the San Francisco District Attorney's Office set up a mediation. Maybe there is something that the DA's office can do in helping you mediate this problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll try that.
I would suggest you do that.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Try that. It may work. You know, the lawyer referral service does its best in doing something, and I think the attorney...
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't feel it was a consumer-friendly...
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that. Now, the attorney who said to you couldn't afford this, maybe it is a big problem. On the other hand...
Well, as I say, I have other assets which I didn't...
Yeah, but that...
And I don't think... why would he ask me?
I don't know.
I don't think that's a very good question.
I don't know. Have you put into writing the problem that you are confronted with respect to the HOA, Homeowners Association? Have you put into writing this?
Into writing what?
Have you written down the issues?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You have. Okay, all right. Well, I do suggest at this point, since you are a San Francisco resident and the Homeowners Association deals with your condo in San Francisco, contact the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, the mediation unit.
Okay.
They have been very active in the past, and hopefully they may give you some lead on this, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, nice to talk to you. Take care, and I'm awfully glad you've called. All right, now that was Michelle, and now we have Vicki. Vicki, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi.
So I have a friend who's in her 70s, and... It's a long story, and I don't even know the whole story, but a piece of it is somebody called and had some information and convinced her that she needed, somehow they got access to her funds and her accounts.
Oh, my.
And part of it, it's it's unclear whether the bank did whatever their due diligence is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's probably beyond the scope of this program, except that maybe you could offer some referrals or some next steps. You know, it's terrible because people feel so overwhelmed and taken sure. advantage of and shamed.
Well, Mike, can you respond to Vicki on that?
Yeah. First of all, I'd get together with your friend, find out just how much money she has, you know, given to someone who's yeah. basically stolen it from her.
Boy, I'll say.
And I, you know, I've seen this one before but she needs some kind of help now so that yeah. you can figure out, has she lost everything or did she just, you know?
No. Okay.
Not everything yet.
Somehow they got into her bank accounts and cleaned those out.
Oh, how much has been cleaned out?
I have no idea.
Okay, all right. Are they preventing you from?
No.
You can still communicate with your friend.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I've seen the circumstance where you know people have come in and you know that had $300,000 in savings and had it all cleaned out. In something like this. And I think if no one else is out there, if they don't have a child that's trying to help them, you know, just maybe you that's got to look, but somebody needs to look at their bank accounts and figure out, you know, how these people got in and make sure that it doesn't happen again, which may mean that she or your neighbor is going to have to reopen or get some new accounts.
Vicki, your friend is in Alameda County. Is that right?
No.
Oh, where?
But she's in a county nearby.
What county? What county?
What county is it?
Well, that's
I don't know. It's over the hill, like Walnut Creek.
I see. Well, Contra Costa County. I would suggest to you that you and your friend get together and perhaps contact the. Perhaps the police department that covers where your friend is living. Start there. See if you can get some help on that, because I think it's very important that you try to do that. That's what I would suggest. Also, you may want to contact the lawyer referral service for the Alameda County Bar Association to try to get some initial direction. That's 510-302-2222. 510-302-2222. And see if that can't help. And I think it may. Well, we have run out of time, Vicki. I'm very sorry to tell you that. Mike, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for coming from Mather to join us here in San Francisco. Michael Hackard is founder of Hackard Law. He's a member of the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar. His book, which I believe is an outstanding, wonderful piece of information for those of you who may be concerned about undue influence and elder financial abuse, The Wolf at the Door, Undue Influence and Elder Financial Abuse. It's available on Amazon Books, and also it's available by Mike's email address, hackard@hackardlaw.com. Mike, thank you very much. Great to have you on the program. Just super. Next time on the program, our topic is legal help for the survivors of the Southern California wildfires. Our guests are members of the Bay Area Resilience Collaborative, who are cooperating with Southern California providers of legal help for the wildfire survivors. This segment, by the way, your legal rights production staff members are program engineer and production assistant Martin McLean. This segment of your legal rights was made possible by the Trust in the State section of the State Bar and the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station.